This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I am Matt Ludke sitting in the Iron Throne. I've got Alex Sharg in the booth. We have lots to talk about today. The Red Wings are 1 point away from clinching their 22nd consecutive playoff berth after last night's W over Nashville. Newest Spartan Alvin Ellis has offered a helping hand in for the MSU coaches to land some top-rated Chicago prospects next season, and lots to talk about in the NBA playoffs. But first and foremost, and probably for most of the show, the NFL draft. Last night, the first round went off without a hitch. I think it was going to drive Mel Kiper crazy because he had no idea what was going to happen or who was taking who. Lots to talk about. Let's start with the Lions, of course. Alex Callers, Ziggy Ansah, you know, three of the tackle prospects, the top three tackle prospects, go in the first four picks, as we sort of predicted yesterday. So the Lions settle on the 6'5", 271-pound Ziggy Ansah out of BYU. You know, he's a guy that's generally regarded as very raw. You know, he only had 4.5 sacks last year. He's from Ghana. He's got limited experience in football. But apparently the Lions loved what they saw at the Senior Bowl when they had a chance to coach him. They got a little up-close and personal look. They apparently liked what they saw. He was very productive in the Senior Bowl game. But, you know, inexperienced guy, it's a risk for sure. Some people are saying he's the next Jason Pierre-Paul. Some people are saying he might not be here in 3 years. Listeners, let us know what you think of Ziggy Ansah. 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. And for me, at least, the first thing I realized about Ziggy when he walked up on the stage was that he was wearing Real D 3D glasses, the type that you get at a movie theater when you're seeing a 3D film. Now, I don't know if that's a generational thing. If it is, I don't know if I really want to be associated with that generation, because I don't know why on earth you would do that. Ziggy, go to Lens Crafters, buddy. There are places you can get real glasses. But Alex, how do you see Ansah fitting in with this Detroit defense, and where do you think he's going to produce next year?
Well, I'll tell you what you think. What I think after I take this call.
Yeah, take that call real quick. Now, you know, you look at what he can do. He's lining up next to Fairley and Sue. That's obviously a very promising defensive front. But, you know, obviously you just worry, can he develop quickly enough to maybe make an impact on that D-line? Because losing Averill to the Seahawks and, you know, missing out on, you know, an elite defensive lineman, basically, because Averill was our sack leader the last two seasons. You let him go. Kyle Vandenbosch leaves. You know, we let him go. They definitely needed some depth there, and, you know, they addressed one of their needs. I think offensive tackle was probably a bigger need, but at the same time, you know, you can't really complain with a top five pick who has the kind of upside he does. You know, the Lions are very confident in their ability to coach him up on the defensive line, and hopefully Schwartz and co. will be able to kind of develop this guy into someone who's going to produce on the field. And he'll have certainly a good opportunity with Fairley and Sue clogging up the middle. Alex, do you see him producing in his rookie season?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, of course, this guy has a lot of things to work on, but like you said, I mean, 2 years and he's got a long way to go. But I had a caller, actually. Let's just take a moment and switch tides here for just a second.
Uh-oh.
The looming decision of Adrian Payne, has anything been decided yet? Right now, from what I've seen, not really. But Tom Izzo spoke of Adrian Payne's future yesterday, and this is according to Mike Griffith from NLive.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what Izzo had to say. Quote, "We've put together as much information as we can, and we've tried to help him as much as we can. It's a tough decision, and in the next 2 or 3 days, he will need to make that decision. I'm hoping the best for Adrian. I hope he does what's best for him, and we'll support him either way." So, some interesting conversation from Izzo. Looks like they're keeping it pretty quiet for the most part.
Yeah, he's been probably the biggest decision that's still yet to be made. I know Shane Larkin, the point guard out of Miami, decided to go ahead and forego his final 2 years of eligibility. And, you know, Jack Ebling had a story where he saw Adrian Payne at dinner. Adrian was eating by himself with his head in his hands. Clearly, this is weighing heavily on him. And, you know, Adrian, if you're listening, by some grace of God you're listening, we're going to love you either way, regardless of what you decide. You know, if you come back, we're going to be super excited for next season, and you know, it'll be a great way to finish your Spartan career. But if you decide to go pro, we are more than proud of you. He's made such incredible strides over his first three seasons. You know, go ahead and get your payday. But, you know, a fringe first round pick, second round pick, certainly a lot to mull over. And, you know, again, Spartan Nation supports you either way, Adrian. Though we would certainly love to see you back here and make a nice run at a national championship, do something really special in that senior season. You know, and you look, and speaking of MSU basketball, maybe we will keep going with that for this first segment. We've got plenty to talk about with the draft. We'll definitely get to that. You know, Alvin Ellis, the newest Spartan, you know, the shooting guard who just signed out of Chicago Wednesday, I believe. He has said that he's going to try and sway some recruits for next season. He's already been reported as being texting with Jahlil Okafor, who is basically the top-rated prospect for next season. He is a big man out of Chicago. He was a USA Today All-American as a junior, and that takes some serious skills to do that. Also, he's looking for some info from Cliff Alexander, who's another big man out of Chicago. And then he's very good friends with Tyler Ulis, who is a 5'8 point guard. He's Travis Walton's cousin. He is ridiculously quick, and they're AAU teammates. And if you look up Tyler on YouTube, you can see some pretty impressive highlights, because he is a smaller player, but boy, oh boy, is he hard to guard. So that's an interesting avenue for next season, and we'll see. You know, I love it when players come in and they don't just come in and, you know, sign their letter of intent. They're trying to improve the program in any way they can. And if that means, you know, getting in somebody's ear about maybe coming to East Lansing for their college education, more power to them. I support that wholeheartedly. Now, you know, as far as Adrian Payne is concerned, again, you know, whether he stays or goes, we're going to support him. And obviously that changes the dynamics of next season as far as preseason expectations and what they can do both offensively and defensively, because, you know, you don't just have 6'10", 240-pound guys that can shoot threes growing on trees. So he's obviously a very intriguing prospect. I think that's probably the reason he's being looked at right now. And, you know, he comes back next year and proves himself even more. And, you know, the sky is legitimately the limit. So, you know, you look at Adrian Payne. Hope he comes back. Either way, we support your decision. All right, let's get back to the Lions. You know, Ziggy Ansah. Part of the reason I think people are most excited is because of the puns that the newspaper headline writers can come up with. Today, the Detroit Free Press, I believe, had getting Ziggy with it. I'm anticipating a, you know, we should have zagged instead of zigged after a poor performance from Ansah. But, you know, you look at what he brings, and, you know, we take that defensive line from maybe a plus with Fairley and Sue, a plus group, to maybe you know, a double plus or a plus-plus group, because, you know, you have three guys who can legitimately terrorize quarterbacks. That's going to help you out. And in today's NFL, where, you know, they're coming along with this read option stuff, you know, a lot of mobile quarterbacks coming in, you're going to need an end who can kind of hold that edge and chase these guys down. And when you look at just the physical nature of Ansah, it's all there. He's the total package as far as raw athletic ability. Now, you know, the one thing that is promising, I think, is that his coach, Bronco Mendenhall, over at BYU, he just raved about his love for the game and his love to learn about the game. And that's the big thing. You know, clearly he's not experienced. You know, he's only got a few years in football. He tried out for the basketball team a few times, didn't make the cut, ran a little track for a little while, and then he kind of found his footing in football. Now, you know, when you have a guy like this who is this raw, it really depends on the situation you come into. And, you know, Jim Schwartz has proven over and over again that he can develop players on the defensive line. I mean, that's really where he made his name in Tennessee, developing that big D-line with, you know, Albert Haynesworth and the like. So, you know, you have a guy who is confident in his abilities to develop a defensive lineman and has proven it, you know, on the field time and time again. So it is a good situation. I don't know if Ziggy thought so. He did not look very happy. Maybe that's just his demeanor, but I did not see a smile yesterday after he got picked. He kind of just looked shell-shocked. So a lot more smiles on Barkevious Mingo, the pick after him. But, you know, you look at Ansah, He's got the potential to be a big-time player, and, you know, if we can get that defensive lineman or defensive line shored up and you know, maybe get another guy later in the draft to fill that other end spot down the road, maybe take a flyer on an aging veteran as the season gets closer. You never know. Maybe Willie Young will finally, you know, start tapping into that potential. You know, every year it looks like it's going to be his breakout year, at least as part of the Lions rotation. But the production just hasn't been there yet. So, I mean, we're still waiting for Willie Young to kind of erupt. But maybe this addition of Ansah will raise his game another level. I mean, you know, defenses are going to be keying on the interior of the line with Sue and Fairley. Those are two big-time tackles that you have down there in the trenches. And that's only going to help in that wide nine technique, you know, opening up lanes for Ansah and potentially Young or whoever they decide to stick at that other defensive end spot. Now, you know, you look at the top five, Eric Fisher, Central Michigan Fire Up Chips. He is the number one overall pick to the Chiefs. Luke Jokel goes second to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Oakland showing some restraint and trading down. You know, who would have thought that would have happened? They trade down with Miami. In Miami, instead of trying to replace left tackle Jake Long, who just departed with another tackle, they instead go to the defensive side of the ball and take the outside linebacker defensive end Deion Jordan out of Oregon. The fourth pick, of course, Lane Johnson for Philadelphia. That took the top three tackles who were kind of head and shoulders above everyone else in this draft, took them off the board before the Lions could get on the clock. So, you know, that's typical Lions luck. But Ansah, he only had 4.5 sacks last season. He played on a great defense, though. I mean, we talk all the time about how good Michigan State's total defense was. Well, BYU was actually better. MSU ranked fourth in total defense last season. BYU ranked third, and that defensive line was a big part of it. They pushed teams around just about every game, and you know Ansah was at the center of that. Now, you know, we played Boise State in the opener, 117-13. BYU lost to Boise State 7-6. So, I mean, if that tells you anything about the kind of defense that they can bring to the table, you know, it's quite an impressive group, and Ansah was certainly at the center of that. So we'll see if he can kind of translate that into the pros in his rookie season. Now, you know, with the Lions having all these off-the-field problems and you know, guys just making stupid mistakes on the field, you know, remember the Titus Young saga, maybe you'd rather have a more experienced player who understands the nuances of football a little bit better than a guy who's only played for a handful of years. But at the same time, when you see those quotes from Mendenhall raving about his passion for the game and passion to learn in general, in addition to just learning football, that kind of bodes well. You know, and if there's one guy who's going to be able to teach him, it's Jim Schwartz and Gunther Cunningham. So, I mean, you have the pieces in place to have a great defensive line. And, you know, everyone says in this day and age in the NFL, you have to get after the quarterback. You know, this is only going to help us do that. Now, as far as the first round in general, there were quite a few interesting tidbits. Before the draft started, there was, you know, talk of 10-plus trades in the first round. Now, we didn't quite get there, only had five. I mentioned before the Oakland and Miami trade. Buffalo traded their first pick, the eighth overall pick, to St. Louis. Buffalo sent their first and third rounders to St. Louis for their first, second, third, and seventh rounders. Now, St. Louis had a bunch of extra picks because last year they traded with Washington for that Robert Griffin III pick. But St. Louis uses that eighth pick to take Tavon Austin, who is probably the most electric player in the draft. He's the first skill position player in the draft and the only one other than Milliner. There was only two skill position players in the top 10, which I don't think you see very often. This was and will be a draft about the trenches. You know, offensive linemen were, what, five of the top 10 were offensive linemen. When you throw in Jonathan Cooper, the guard from North Carolina, and Chance Warmack, the guard from Alabama. So you look at that. That's it's a pretty stacked, pretty beefy top 10. Certainly going to have to use the wide lens for that first-round draft photo. Now, you know, you look at the Alabama trio here at numbers 9 through 11. Now, they went back to back to back. Dee Milliner, who, of course, we discussed as a potential Lions draft pick, he goes number 9 to the Jets, stepping into that Darrell Revis role. The Titans take Chance Warmack at 10, and the Chargers take DJ Fluker at 11. Now, this is the second time that players have gone back to back to back. The first time was 2011 when USC had Stanley Havili, David Osbury, and Malcolm Smith go in the seventh round. So that was 240, 241, and 242, which is, I think, significantly less impressive than going 9, 10, 11. So there's another feather in the cap for Nick Saban at Alabama. That's just one of the 7,000 recruiting pitches he can throw at a high school player to get him to sign with the Crimson Tide. So we're going to take a quick break. Lots to talk about. Give us a call, 517-355-9527, or toll free at 877-952-7870. Let us know what you think of the Lions' first round selection, who you think they're going to take in these next couple rounds tonight. We'll take a quick break. Be back with more sports talk after this.
Millions of years ago, giants roamed the Earth. I'm Ira Flatow. Join me on Science Friday for a look at Utah's paleontological treasures. We'll talk about the Utah Raptor, and it's not a sports team. Plus, what looking at the deserts of Utah can teach us about the planet Mars. All on Science Friday from NPR.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Good afternoon, this is Scott Pohl. Today will be mostly sunny and our high will be 57. For tonight, a low of 40 and mostly clear. Saturday, the high 68 and mostly sunny. Mostly cloudy on Sunday and we could get some rain. Sunday's high in the mid-60s.
Welcome back, Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Alex, before we get going on the first round in general and some of the surprises, did you end up watching the draft last night?
Oh, I absolutely did. And I think the bigger surprises, besides for the whole Teo and the whole Geno Smith push-off, was the fact that we saw a lot of trades. I mean, we saw a lot of trades within that first round. We saw the Vikings moving up. We saw a lot of guys falling in love with certain players, regardless if they were going to go early. I mean, even though, you know, it's drafting a tight end in the first round, like the Lions did with Pettigrew, you know, with Tyler Eifert on Notre Dame, it seems like, I don't know. But, I mean, look how Pettigrew panned out. So it's a little shaky every year.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's just a little aside here, did you see how good Barry Sanders looked? Does that guy age? It's ridiculous. He's Rob Lowe. It's uncanny. He looks 34. He looks like he could still play for the Lions and still be our best player. He, of course, assisted Roger Goodell in making that Lions selection. But you're right, lots of trades. The Vikings making some serious noise. I think if you're looking at teams who made out the best, the Vikings certainly have to be up there. Now, they traded with New England in the Patriots' classic trade down, which it seems like they do every single season. They sent their second rounder, third rounder, fourth rounder, and seventh rounder for that 29th pick. So they really went for broke on this first day. At 23, they get Sharif Floyd, who was projected as a top five pick. This is Nick Fairley-esque for the Lions a few years ago, except he falls all the way to 23rd. He was rated number 3 coming in some mock drafts. So the defensive tackle, he's a perfect fit there. They have 4 defensive linemen who are in the final year of their contract. He looks like he's going to step right in for Kevin Williams when he eventually leaves. And then at 25, with the pick they got in the Percy Harvin trade with the Seahawks, they go out and get cornerback Xavier Rhodes out of Florida State. And then they trade back up for that 29th pick and get Cordarrelle Patterson out of Tennessee, who's going to maybe replace the production that Percy Harvin provided up in Minnesota. So you look at them, they really swung for the fences. I think these are 3 really good picks, especially the value that they got. I think they all fell a little bit farther than people might have expected, especially when you're talking about Floyd. So you look at that, that's a great first round. You know, granted, they don't really have many picks left, but at the same time, you know, they have no picks tonight, no picks in rounds 2 or 3, but they still have 5 Saturday on day 3. So, you know, you look at that, that's That's a great pick, a couple of great picks, actually. And Alex, if you had to pick, let's say, three teams who made out the best in round one, who do you have and why?
Well, the first three teams definitely were the Vikings. I mean, making that noise, you can't go wrong with them. I mean, another team that I really liked what they did was, I mean, that Lane Johnson pick. I mean, I think that's a really underrated offensive tackle just because of the Eric Fisher and the Luke Jokel hype. I mean, Lane Johnson at Oklahoma. I mean, this guy was very highly touted coming out of high school, has some great size and frame, maybe isn't lacking the same tools that Eric Fisher has for the NFL right now, but I think this could be a future Pro Bowl Hall of Fame offensive tackle. And the other team I liked, of course, was what the Falcons did. I mean, I think what they did was, for as late as a pick they had, I think they did everything right.
Yeah, I mean, they took Desmond Trufant, the corner from Washington. Now, and they were part of a deal with the Rams, of course, moving up from number 30 to 22. And in that deal, they also sent their third-round pick and sixth-round pick this year. But they pick up a 2015 seventh-rounder, and you never know when a seventh-rounder is going to come in handy. So
could be an irrelevant.
Hey, you know, you never know. And, you know, if Ryan Succop is any indication, Mr. Irrelevant can be quite relevant. So, you know, you never know in the NFL draft. Now, if I was picking three teams, I think, you know, the Vikings are certainly there just because the amount of picks they had. I really like the Steelers getting Jarvis Jones out of Georgia at number 17. Now, at one time, before the injury concerns started cropping up, he was touted as the number one pick. I remember, you know, a few months ago, Mel Kiper just could not stop singing his praises. And if you're a linebacker, is there any team you would rather play for than the Steelers? I mean, they just churn out guys who are all pros, you know, defensive MVPs. It just seems like that is a perfect fit, both in terms of where he fell to for the Steelers picking him and where he's going with the Steelers picking him. So, you know, congrats to Jarvis Jones. I think that was, they made out like bandits getting him at 17. And then you mentioned it before, the Tyler Eifert pick by the Bengals. I kind of like it. I think that maybe makes their offense pretty darn scary because you have an A.J. Green, who is one of the top young receivers in the NFL. You have Jermaine Gresham, who is a big-time weapon at tight end already, and now you have Tyler Eifert as the other tight end. I mean, that's three quality pass catchers for Andy Dalton. And, you know, if I'm talking about tonight here, I would love to see the Bengals now as a future destination for maybe a Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I know they're looking at Eddie Lacy, who is still on the board, and a quick aside there, no running back taken yesterday. First time in 49 years, no running back has been taken in the first round, so we'll have to wait until tonight to see a running back go off the board, and Lacy is slated to be number one. But if I'm Le'Veon Bell, I'm looking at those skill players for the Bengals, and I'm saying, wow, that'd be a whole lot of fun if you have a guy like Gresham, Tyler Eifert, and A.J. Green alongside you. That's a dangerous offense, and you know they already play some pretty great defense. They're a solid team, so maybe look out for the Bengals. I don't think I've ever said that in my entire life, look out for the Bengals, but hey, why not? You know, and that's, I think, my top three as far as maybe picks that are questionable. I think everybody's kind of looking at the Cowboys taking Travis Frederick, the center out of Wisconsin, at number 31. But when you think about that, I mean, he's a center from Wisconsin. I don't know how wrong you can go. I feel like if you play on the offensive line at Wisconsin, you're a solid player, and I think he fits the bill there. But I think, you know, the one everybody's talking about, the Bills, going with EJ Manuel at number 16, the only QB taken in the first round. Everybody was thinking it'd be Geno Smith. Poor guy had to sit through the entire round and not get picked. Takes the Aaron Rodgers experience to a whole new level. But EJ Manuel, now, you know, if you're the Bills, you just hired Doug Marrone from Syracuse. Syracuse's quarterback, Ryan Nassib, on the board, and they go with Manuel instead. Now, Alex, do you think that is just kind of the general direction the NFL is going, where they want to get a more mobile option, or do you think there's a deeper reasoning there?
Well, I think it falls in love with just loving that prospect. I mean, you look at what some teams have done in the past to reach on some guys. I mean, you saw when Darius Hayward Bay was drafted out of Oakland when there were so many wide receivers ahead of him. So you look at what EJ Manuel was drafted, and you look at the reasons why he was. I think maybe just that Buffalo Bills, maybe they reminded him of a past quarterback. Maybe just his statistical numbers reminded him of an ideal fit they wanted out of the team. There's so many reasons. You can't really say.
Yeah, and it seems like Florida State just has great luck, with their quarterbacks going early. Christian Ponder a few years ago, and now E.J. Manuel just way ahead of where they were projected. Big payday for him in terms of what he was expecting and what he's now going to get. He's a big quarterback, 6'5", 237. Maybe they wanted somebody a bit sturdier back there who still brings that mobile option. So, Geno Smith apparently is going to be back in New York for rounds 2 and 3 tonight. Hopefully he gets picked soon. I would feel really bad if he fell all the way to the third round. I think he'll be a fine player if he eventually gets picked. Callers, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527. Toll free at 877-952-7870. So, no running back since 1963. That is crazy. And you look at some other odds and ends, no Geno and no Manti Te'o. Now, Manti Te'o, I think Adam Schefter said Te'o more than any other word, last night. It was just Te'o this, Te'o that. We're in Manti Te'o territory. Once we got to pick 20, he just kept saying Manti Te'o territory every commercial break. I think people are kind of burned out of Manti Te'o. Maybe NFL teams are too. We'll see where he goes. He's projected, any of these teams that need a middle linebacker. Now that we're into the second round, you can start taking risks a little bit. But no Manti Te'o, so, maybe his first-round pick was just a Twitter hoax or something. I don't know. There's a joke there somewhere. But, you look at some of the moves that people made. The Raiders fell back to 12th. They took DJ Hayden. People thought maybe they'd take a Geno Smith there. Instead, they take the corner out of Houston, who we mentioned the other day had that ridiculous freak injury. They showed the video of it on the draft coverage last night. It was pretty ugly. Takes a knee to the chest, severed a vein in the bottom of his heart. The doctor apparently said it was like stitching tissue paper together, which sounds nearly impossible. So, hats off to the medical team there, and congrats to DJ. 95% fatal injury. He recovers, and a few months later, he is the 12th pick of the NFL draft. So, that's a story if I've ever heard one. And when you look ahead to today, Alex, rounds 2 and 3, Lions got a couple picks here. Who do you think they're looking at? Where do you think they're going to go in terms of positions, and why?
Well, first off, you got to look at the fact that they addressed the need. They had the defensive end role. They had the offensive tackle role they still have to conquer. But I think offensive tackle comes next because that's too big of a void. Yes, I probably would have wanted them to draft Milner. Yes, honestly, sure, it fills that Cliff Avril void. And maybe hoping that he pans out, it will be a dominant defensive line. But then you have a lot of holes in the secondary still, a lot of holes with the offensive tackle position. But besides that, I think they're going to draft probably 3 or 4 offensive tackles and just throw them in there and see which ones perform.
Right. Take your chances. Quantity over quality. Now, looking at some mock drafts of the second round, I've seen two names predominantly. One is Menelik Watson from Florida State. He is an offensive tackle. He's British, so maybe we'd go for like an international draft. Maybe we'd try and become the San Antonio Spurs of the NFL. I mean, we did just sign Harvard Ruglund, the Norwegian kicker. We just drafted a defensive end from Ghana, and now we might be looking at an offensive tackle from Great Britain. So, a little international flavor. Maybe we revamp our image from guys who get arrested to guys who are from interesting places. So, I think that's a move up in terms of the PR ladder. Now, the other name I've seen is Cornelius Carradine, also from Florida State. He's a defensive end. Now, that would really solidify that front four as far as the future is concerned. Now, either of these guys, great names. If we go with the Ziggy Ansah first and then a Menelik Watson, man, the third rounder is going to have a doozy of a name if he wants to live up to the precedent set by the first two picks. And Cornelius is no slouch of a name either. So either way, the Lions are going to have fun players to talk about if they go in either of these directions. Callers, let us know what you think. Who do you think the Lions should take tonight and why? 517-355-9527, toll free at 877-952-7870. And you look at the holes, I think offensive tackle, I think we've got to take a couple this draft, at least two offensive line prospects, just because the cupboard is dwindling, so to speak. You know, you lose a Jeff Backus, you lose Gostar Chehalis, you lose Steven Peterman. You know, Riley Reiff can only play in one spot at a time, so, you know, you can't fill all three holes with him. You know, you take Ansa, he's apparently the best player available in their eyes, and certainly he looks like he could be a playmaker if things pan out. Certainly a risky pick, though. I think the Lions have a lot of confidence in their coaching ability. But after last year, I'm a little wary because, you know, we saw all this off-the-field stuff. It kind of bled onto the field as far as performance goes, losing all sorts of games in all sorts of magical ways. Same old Lions sort of thing. So, you know, you want to see if they can maybe rebound and start building again, bounce back, maybe get into the playoffs. But, you know, you look at the rest of the NFC North and what they did. Now, we already mentioned the Vikings. They're going for broke this year, you know, three picks in the first round and then no picks on day two. At the same time, you look at the Bears. I think another one of the big surprises of that first round was Kyle Long. Now, he is, again, Howie Long's son. He plays guard. He was at Oregon. And when you looked at his, you know, his highlight reel when they were showing it, it didn't seem that impressive. You know, I wasn't overly impressed. Now, obviously, he plays offensive guard, so it's going to be a little tougher to judge. But that one kind of left people scratching their heads because right after him, Tyler Eifert went to the Bengals, who were probably dancing in the streets because they got a playmaker at 21. But, you know, you look at a team like the Bears who just need someone other than Brandon Marshall to catch the football. Now, granted, I enjoyed that because Brandon Marshall was on my fantasy team last year, so, you know, it worked out for me that the Bears' offense was one-dimensional. But Kyle Long, you know, he's not going to be catching any passes, so maybe look for the Bears to address those needs in the second and third rounds and going forward in the draft here. And then, of course, the Green Bay Packers, who took a D'Tone Jones, 6'4", 283-pound defensive end out of UCLA. That guy looks like a playmaker. You pair him up with a Jarrell Worthy and a B.J. Raji inside. The Packers look like they're going to improve on the defensive line, maybe taking a page out of the Lions book and trying to get some pressure out of there. Now, Alex, out of the NFC North, who do you think had the best first round? Is it the Vikings just by quantity?
Well, I wouldn't say it's more by quantity. I think it's just they filled their needs. You know, they moved up on a lot of draft boards. They moved up on rounds to draft players to fit their needs. So that's what I'd say. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're a big-time NFL team, granted, if your fans are, they're going to be a little bored tonight, but, you know, when you make a splash like that, it really re-energizes the fan base. And, you know, coming off the insane season that Adrian Peterson had, they look like they've got a little momentum moving forward. Now, whether or not Christian Ponder is the real deal remains to be seen, but at the same time, you know, you look at what the Vikings did, and they definitely made a splash. You know, you trade away probably your second best playmaker in Percy Harvin, but you get another deep threat here in Cordarrelle Patterson. And that guy, you know, he only played 1 year in the SEC, but, you know, in game one, he was just torching David Amerson out of NC State, who was like the best corner in the country coming into the season. That moniker left him after that game. That's how badly Cordarrelle Patterson torched him. So hopefully Glover Quinn and Lou Delmas and co. can keep an eye on Patterson moving forward, and we'll see what the Packers do, because I think the Packers are probably the best in terms of, you know, drafting players and developing them, so we'll see who they take and who, you know, eventually will become a star, because one of them will. But, you know, let's move on now. Moving with the Lions, there is a player named Darius Slay. Now, he was potentially a first-round pick, tore his meniscus. Now he's going to drop. If I'm the Lions, I'm keeping my eyes on a guy like Darius Slay. Now we need help in the secondary. I think that could probably be said every season and probably every season until the end of time. They need help in the secondary. If you take a flyer on a guy in the fifth round because he has an injury concern, I think that's okay. I think you can risk that fifth round pick. Now, you know, it's not like we're putting all our eggs in the Darius Slay basket potentially, but, you know, I think he's a better pick than like a Tim Tune. It seems like once we get to the last day of the draft, the Lions don't really care anymore, and they just start picking guys at random. You know, and I don't mean to pick on Tim Tune, but, you know, he never really did anything. It seems like we don't really get that great production out of those third-round guys. Now, obviously, those guys are diamonds in the rough by nature, so many of them are not going to pan out. But if you have a guy who's just an injury concern away from being a first-round pick, and he drops to potentially the third day, I think that's when you got to jump on him. So maybe they'll keep their eyes on that. It remains to be seen, of course. I'm excited to see maybe some MSU guys going tonight. I think Le'Veon Bell will likely get picked tonight, I'm hoping. Deion Sims on the fence, Will Golston on the fence probably tomorrow. Where do you see these guys going?
Well, now, if Le'Veon Bell gets picked tonight, in your opinion, where does Eddie Lacy go?
I don't know. I would love to see Le'Veon Bell go to the Bengals, but, you know, maybe they take Lacy instead. You know, they've got an earlier pick in this round. You look at a team like the Steelers, Mike Tomlin had dinner with Le'Veon Bell. Now, granted, he had dinner with Kirk Cousins, too, last season, but I don't think anybody thought the Redskins were going to take Kirk Cousins, including Kirk Cousins and including Robert Griffin III. But, I mean, you look at the Steelers, that's a good fit. Maybe the Packers come in round two with a late pick. They take Le'Veon Bell. Anywhere he goes, I think he's going to be a good fit. I'm excited to see him in the pros. I'm excited to see him in Madden because, you know, that's just part of the fun. But, you know, I think he can make an impact wherever he goes. Where do you want to see him go, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really where I want to see him. Where will he ultimately go? I'd say probably middle, second round.
Right.
Best guess. But, yeah, I mean, definitely can make an impact.
Wherever he goes. Maybe the Rams look at somebody to fill the hole that Steven Jackson left. You know, there's teams that need running backs. And this is the day where, you know, I think they're going to really go like dominoes. You've got a Giovanni Bernard on the board. You've got Monty Ball, who no one's really talking about. He set all sorts of records at Wisconsin. Granted, you know, when you're playing at Wisconsin, I think I could get 5 yards of carry. But still, you know, he's set records for a reason. That guy's a heck of a player. So it'll be interesting to see where the running backs go and in what order. So, you know, we'll keep our eyes on that. Now we're going to take our second break here. Stay tuned for more sports talk. We'll talk maybe a little bit about the NBA. We'll keep going with the draft. Let us know. Sports Talk AM 870.
Barbara Streisand just received the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Chaplin Award, a Lifetime Achievement Award. On the next Fresh Air, Streisand talks with us about her films, her music, and growing up with her widowed mother.
I was known on the block, you know, when I was a child as the kid with no father and a good voice.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870.
The forecast is for a high of 57 and mostly sunny today. Tonight, the low will be 40 and it'll be mostly clear. Mostly sunny tomorrow, the high Saturday 68. Mostly cloudy with a high of 66 and a chance of rain on Sunday. I'm Scott Pohl.
Welcome back, WKAR AM 870. Matt Ludke here with Alex Sharg in the booth. And you know what? We've talked quite a bit about the draft. If you want to give us a call and share your thoughts on the Lions or just the draft in general, maybe where you think some of these Spartans are going to end up, give us a call at 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. But those of you that have not given up on hockey due to the second lockout in, 6 years, the Red Wings, in a dogfight for that playoff spot, that eighth and final playoff spot, they are currently sitting in seventh place with 54 points after last night's 5-2 win over Nashville. And if you watch this game, the Red Wings were coming out firing early. They were definitely aggressive, sometimes to their detriment in terms of penalties. But, 18 seconds in, they get a great look, a wide open net, and Zetterberg misses the net. Now, right after that, of course, Nashville came down and put the first goal on the board. But it just seemed like, the Red Wings were not going to be denied. And of course, the mule, Johan Franzen, somebody must have told him that, their backs are against the wall. The playoffs have basically started early because he is playing like some playoff Johan Franzen. He's got 7 goals in his last 7 games, which is as many as he had in the entire season up to that point. So, this is a guy who performs best when there's the most on the line, and it seems like he's just ramping up for another playoff run. Now, hopefully they can squeak in. They only need 1 point to clinch a playoff spot, and they have Dallas coming up on Saturday. It's going to be tight. I think they're going to get in, and you know, if I am the Blackhawks or the Sharks or whoever, or the Ducks of Anaheim, who are currently in second in the West, I want absolutely no part of the Red Wings. They understand playoff hockey. They've been on the other side of this situation before and gotten beat. They know that it can happen. I mean, you look at the Los Angeles Kings last year. They were the 8 seed. They won the Stanley Cup. So, you know, once you get into the playoffs, it is a second season. And in no sport is that truer than in hockey. All you need is a hot goalie and maybe some momentum and, you know, a ride and high to end the season to even make the playoffs. Sometimes it bodes well. Usually it bodes well for teams. So, you know, you look at the Red Wings and Alex, do you think they're getting in? B, do you think they can really make some noise if they do?
Yeah, well, if they're going to get into this playoff, I think they definitely can make noise. Look at this team. Look at who's behind them on this team. Look at the expensive contract that was just allowed to their goalie. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, if you're Chicago, granted, you know, you started out the season like a house on fire. You know, they just ran through the NHL. They've been sitting in first for months. You know, maybe they kind of lost their edge. It's tough maybe when you jump out to such a huge lead on everyone and then you kind of coast into the playoffs. It's hard to flip that switch. I don't care who you are. I mean, unless maybe you're the Miami Heat, you know, it's not easy to just kind of turn it on and raise that level of intensity. So, you know, they better be ready, and that goes for the Ducks as well. So, you know, you look at Detroit, 1 point versus Dallas to clinch. All they need to do is tie. And in addition, they have other scenarios that will get them in, and both involve, you know, a Columbus Blue Jackets loss or Minnesota losing out. Those are a little more complicated, though. I like to use, you know, the Red Wings control their own destiny. So, you know, if they win, they're in. And, you know, coming into the week, they knew they had to get a couple wins in a row. They've done just that. They're playing great hockey right now. So, you know, you look at the Wings, and they're certainly dangerous in the NHL playoffs. Now, on the other side of things, over on the hardwood, definitely some NBA playoff action last night and some interesting action last night. Now, the Bulls beat the Nets in a game that I don't think anybody was watching, and if they were, they were probably sleeping through it. 79-76. This is an interesting stat here. The Bulls scored 14 points in the fourth quarter. They were outscored 24-14. They still won. They had zero field goals over the last 5 minutes and 46 seconds of the game and 2 free throws. They scored 2 points in the last 5 minutes and 46 seconds, and they still won the game. So if that doesn't tell you that the Nets are in trouble, I don't know what does. That's a box score that is straight out of, you know, a 2003-2004 Pistons game or something. 79-76. You know, what happened to these NBA rules that increased scoring? You know, 2-1 Bulls in that series. Now they have game 4 Saturday in Chicago. I think right now the Bulls are certainly in the driver's seat as far as that series is concerned. The Nets might be a little bit better, but, you know, nobody plays tougher than the Bulls. Tom Thibodeau, great defensive intensity on that team. They give their all, and I think the Bulls are probably going to hang on there. And I think the question there, if the Bulls do make the second round, Derrick Rose, the elephant on the bench, you know, does he return to the lineup in the second round if they advance? Now they'd be playing the Miami Heat. So, you know, is it worth it if you're Chicago to kind of throw Derrick Rose to the fire, so to speak? You know, you're not getting him back for a couple of meaningless regular season games. You're throwing him into the playoffs against the best team in the league, the team that you just broke their 27-game win streak. They're going to bring it next series. And, you know, I'm penciling the Heat into the next series because the Bucks aren't going to win. But, you know, Alex, if you are the Bulls management, are you putting Derrick Rose back in the lineup? Or are you just saying, you know what, we'll wait till next year. We've got a better shot next year anyway.
I honestly think putting Derrick Rose will increase their chance of winning. What's the harm in not doing it? It's not like you're already going to risk the injury again. The point of putting Derrick Rose in is to ignite the fire for these fans and shut everybody up.
Yeah, and I mean, and it certainly would, because I think they're getting a little restless now. You know, I don't think there's a city that loves a player more than Chicago loves Derrick Rose. I mean, he's a hometown kid. He gives like 150% every time he's out on the floor. He's, you know, the youngest MVP winner ever. lots of things. They definitely respect him, but, you know, in turn, he's been cleared for weeks to return to play. He's been practicing for weeks. Everyone says he's the best player in all their practices. But at the same time, this is a guy who's, you know, I think the biggest hurdle he has left is that mental hurdle. It's you know, it's not like he got body checked and landed awkwardly when he tore his knee up. It was just a regular kind of play. And if that happens in the back of your mind, I don't care who you are, it's always going to be there that, you know, at any time my knee could just go. And I feel like if you do it once, maybe you're more susceptible to doing it again. You know, if he's constantly thinking about it, maybe he won't be as effective. And, you know, I don't know if the Bulls would beat the Heat in a series even if he did play. It would certainly increase ratings. It would definitely, maybe this has been, you know, their plan all along. You know, their ace in the hole. We're going to bring back Derrick Rose when we play the Heat. And granted, you know, the Bulls did snap that streak, so they've proven that they're capable of beating the Heat. Whether or not they can do that over a seven-game series remains to be seen, and I'm not exactly sure they can do it. But, you know, it would certainly make things interesting, and it would definitely be a great story. I'm sure Adidas would run wild with the commercial ideas they could have for that. You know, so we'll keep our eyes on that. But I think the Bulls are going to take that series. I don't think the Nets are good at all. You know, Deron Williams has kind of been off and on this whole season, and any team that has Chris Humphreys is easy to root against, so I'm going to take the Bulls there. Now, in the other series in the East last night, the Heat take a 3-0 lead on the Bucks, 104-91. Ray Allen sets the playoff record for most three-pointers with 322. He passes Reggie Miller, who now has zero three-point NBA records. I'm sure that will really, you know, stick in his craw for the rest of his broadcasting career. I'm sure he's not going to be able to talk about how he owns records. Tough break, Reggie. Ray Allen gotcha. You know, he's I think Ray Allen is probably one of the best shooters ever. He definitely deserves all these accolades that he's getting. You know, just kind of cleaning up. But of course, you know, the Heat in their you know, standard trademark fashion, take control of the game in the third quarter. They were down at half. Milwaukee was playing pretty well, and then they just turn it on. They outscore the Bucks 30-18 in the third quarter. Big surprise there. 23-7 run to kind of take control. This is what they do. I mean, they get to a point in the game, teams kind of hang around, and then they just stomp down on them. You know, they stop everything defensively. They can just ratchet up the intensity, turn teams over, and before you know it, it's 12-0 the other way. So the Heat, business as usual. I think they're probably going to coast into the Eastern Conference Finals at the very least, and probably the NBA Finals. So, you know, you look at LeBron and company, and, you know, Dwayne Wade went 1-for-12, and they won comfortably. So it shows that even when they're not hitting on all cylinders, they're still good enough to beat a majority of teams in the NBA. Now, on the other end of things, in the West, the Clippers dropped their first game to the Memphis Grizzlies. It is now 2-1 Clippers. Former Spartan Zach Randolph returning to his, you know, his usual all-star self. He has 13 in the first quarter, 18 in the first half, and finishes with 27 points and 11 rebounds. That is the Zebo of old. And, you know, they hold Chris Paul on the other side to just 8 points and 6 assists. So, you know, that's going to change the tenor of the series. Now, no road team has won in that series. And, you know, playoffs don't really start until the road team wins a game. So, you know, we'll see if the Clips can pull out game four. This is usually what happens if the home team wins those first two games. That third game is the key game of the series, and Memphis certainly gave it their all, out-rebounding the Clippers 45-33 after getting dominated on the glass in the first two games. So maybe home court means a little bit more in that series. And, you know, it seems like they go seven games every year. It seems like they play each other every year in the playoffs. So I would not be surprised to see that one go the distance. Now, Alex, over in the West, you know, the East is kind of the Heat's, you know, conference to lose. Over in the West, do you see Oklahoma City kind of coasting through to another rematch with the Heat? Or do you think one of these teams, you know, all these series are interesting, one of these teams is going to challenge the Thunder and maybe steal that finals bid?
Of course, no way to tell. But I think there definitely are some teams that have the capability to beat the Thunder. I mean, look what Golden State has been doing. Look at what some of these other teams in the conference have been doing with the tools that they were giving. Yes, the Lakers, sure, the disappointment. This might have been their conference to maybe be the dark horse in. But I don't know. They've got some pretty good teams that can creep up there.
Yeah, I think the Lakers playoff hopes were torn to shreds, along with Kobe Bryant's Achilles in that game against the Warriors. And speaking of the Warriors, Stephen Curry is questionable for tonight. Now, if he sits out, I will be shocked, you know, more shocked than I was when E.J. Manuel was the first quarterback taken. I will be truly shocked. You don't have a player of his caliber sitting out of a playoff game because he rolled his ankle. I don't care how susceptible to ankle injuries he is. You know, and you look at what they're doing. You know, they lose David Lee in the first game. Draymond Green getting some more minutes. They shoot 65% in game two versus Denver. I mean, the Western Conference, if you're going to be watching the NBA playoffs, you know, just skip the East, because you're going to see Boston shoot 19% in second halves, and you're going to see Miami just destroy everyone. But if you want some interesting basketball action, the West is where it's at, because the Warriors are incredibly entertaining. So are the Nuggets, who they're playing. I mean, the Lakers are a sideshow, really. The Spurs are just going to waltz through there, I believe. And then, you know, you've got other great series. You know, even Oklahoma City, the powerhouse of that conference, going against Houston, they only won by 3 the other day. So, you know, it's not like anything is given in the Western Conference. It was more competitive the entire season, and it's looking more competitive in this first couple rounds of the playoffs. In other news, now we're going to go, oh, looks like we have a caller. Oh, okay. You know, and you look at Oklahoma City, it's you know, Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Now, Westbrook, obviously one of the most explosive players. He's always angry, which I think is kind of good sometimes. But at the same time, if he's not going for 27 and 13 assists, he might put up 27 shots and make, you know, six. It's good Russ and it's bad Russ. And, you know, without James Harden there to kind of balance things out, he was sort of the security blanket, as Bill Simmons puts it. You know, you look at a guy like Russell, and he's played great this season. You know, I think he's definitely improved this year from his previous few seasons. He's still the second fiddle to Durant, but he is a heck of a second fiddle to have. And you look at their offense, and it's just those two guys, you know, really destroying people. And whether or not they can move forward and beat a team like the Spurs, who look like they might be on a bit of a collision course. But I think, you know, the Clippers can score right with the Thunder. You know, San Antonio can certainly do it. I mean, Denver can play at a pace that's even faster than Oklahoma City does. So, you know, whoever they play when they move on into the second round, you know, obviously it's going to be the winner of that Memphis Clippers series. It's going to be an interesting one, and, you know, however many games that Memphis-LA Clippers series goes, you know, maybe that has an effect on the freshness of that team. But at the same time, they're going to be in a dogfight, and, you know, I think they definitely knew that Houston was going to challenge them, and Houston did the other night. I mean, if Houston can get hot for a few games here and start hitting threes, they can beat just about anybody. So, you know, you look at the NBA playoffs, and in the West, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot. The East is kind of a known commodity at this point. But a quick little tidbit here. You know, I'm sure in the run to the NCAA championship game back in March, in the thick of March Madness, stories came out that Rick Pitino promised that he would get a tattoo if Louisville ended up winning the national championship game. Of course, they did, defeating Michigan in that title game. And yesterday, news broke. Rick Pitino tatted up his first tattoo. It says 2013. It's got the L for Louisville, NCAA champs, 35-5. The tattoo artist is quoted, this, I thought this was pretty funny, quoted as saying, "I was running a free special for any Hall of Fame coaches who won an NCAA championship in the last 30 days. And, you know, that's a pretty limited group. I think the real question here is, when is Gino Auriemma going to get his tattoo for his national title? So, you know, we'll see if Gino can match Rick tat for tat. But, you know, you look at that, and it's a great story, and it's always good when coaches hold up their end of the bargain. So that's going to wrap up our show for today. Be sure to tune into the NFL Draft second and third round tonight at 6:30, and join us tomorrow, 1:05 p.m. You have, of course, been listening. Oh, wow, join us Monday. Jeez, it's Friday already. 1:05 p.m. here on WKAR East Lansing, AM 870. Go have yourself a safe and pleasant evening. I'm Matt Ludke with Alex Sharg. Thank you for producing, Alex. We'll catch you next week. Have a great weekend.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.